Welcome to the mundane festival. Welcome to the Negro League. Sign your name on the blacklist and know this is American history. Shout out to Donnie Colored Section. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is January 28, 2018. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. Not unlike the decision I made earlier this morning after a show. It was late night and I went to McDonald's and I shouldn't have did that. It was really good and just shouldn't have done that. I'm holding myself accountable. You shouldn't have did that shit, Chris. You fucking idiot. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 259 of the show. Super special return guest, Fonte Coleman of the Foreign Exchange, Questlove Supreme. Very happy to have him back on the show. I'm going to share that with you in a bit. I'm going to give you a few dates where I'm going to be doing stand-up comedy. How about that? It's Thursday, February 1st. I'm going to be at the Mockingbird doing the show called King Hippo, which is a show, free show, I believe, which is hosted by comedian Mike Brown. You know him, you love him. And Mike Brown of the Comedy Outliers, MTV Decoded, Ayanna Dookie, who's a very funny comedian. I believe she wrote for 50 Cent Show on BET. So it's going to be a good time. We're going to rock out, have some fun. And I think they do like a dance party or something afterwards. I've seen a couple clips from this show, like of Mike and Ayanna fooling around, hosting. Gordon Baker Bone was on one of the videos. It seems like a fun time. So I'm excited to do that. February 5th, I am going to be doing the show called, what is it called? It's called The Wheel Comedy Show. And it's like supposedly like this new, it's a brand new show. It's the first iteration of it. So that's going to be at 7 o'clock in Ridgewood, Queens. It's like Ridgewood, Bushwick area. The cool, hip, trendy area. It's at this place called the Footlight Bar, which I think is a relatively new venue. So that should be cool. I'm gonna have a good time, do some stuff, working on some things, working on some new bits. So that's there. And then yeah, some other stuff coming up that I don't really have the dates for. I'll be around. And then the big show that I'm doing is that's not until April, and that's in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So I'm headlining that. So if you catch me in these streets, in the New York streets, I'm working on some shit to do, to headline for. So I'm just working, you know, just like to have, I like to have, if you're any type of artist, you want to have something that you're working on, even though like, you just want to have something you're working on to get your, to get focused. So this week was pretty good. I had a good week. I got to do some shows at Bananas Comedy Club, like a last minute type thing, hosting for Michael Costa from The Daily Show. Bananas is like 15-20 minutes south of me, so I was lucky to just do some shows and not be at home, not performing, not living my dream, and just playing PlayStation and drinking ginger ale. Although that's fun, but it's not that productive. You know what I mean? So it was good to get out and do some stand-up comedy. I went Thursday night, this past Thursday, I went to go see one of my favorite artists, Rachel Yamagata, who's a singer-songwriter. She's now based in upstate New York. Got to see her do her thing. I talked about that on the Patreon episode. I talked about a lot of shit on the Patreon episode. You can even catch this week's guest, Fonte, on the Patreon page talking about Black Mirror. So that was a lot of fun. And you know what? You know what, guys? Let's get to this conversation with Fonte. So here's the thing. So Fonte, we scheduled a chat for Black Mirror, and we did that. That's posted. That's episode 260 on the Patreon page, and we shot the shit and talked about that for about an hour and change. And before we got into Black Mirror, we were just kind of talking about a couple current event things and just asking him about music stuff. And that became this episode. So I just split the conversation in half, and you have me and Fonte just having a chat, you know, just having a chat about things, you know. We had a good time, yeah. So without further ado, here is my conversation with the great Fontigolo of the Foreign Exchange and Questlove Supreme. Hope you enjoy it. So I know it's been a couple weeks now, and now that things have died down a little bit, I just wanted to get your thoughts on this and maybe kind of recollect on where you were in your life. Where were you? Do you remember where you were when Justin Timberlake released the cover art for Man of the Woods?
I was at the crib. Mm-hmm. At my house in the woods.
Okay.
And I saw that shit. I said, man, boy, Justin, he want to be a white man again. He tired of this nigga shit.
Yeah.
He said, this is over. Man, I was watching that shit. It was so funny to me. And then, like, cause it was multiple moments that just felt very, and I won't say disheartening, but I mean, because I'm not invested in fucking Justin Timberlake, but mm-hmm. It was just like, it just felt so on the nose, man, and just so like, oh my God, man, like this shit is just, he's in the mountains and then he's in a field, and then like he has a song on the album called Flannel. It's like, what, nigga?
It's weird. I just finished right before you called. He's got this new video, I guess, that came out today called Supplies.
Is that the Supplies, dude? Which is like the unsexiest title. Like, because, dude, I mean, I sing, right? And I write. And so there's just certain words that you don't sing. Or if you do sing those words, you know, you maybe can sing them in a verse or maybe whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, but the name of your song is called Supplies.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way to make, I can't think of any way to make that hot, dude. Like, that's so, like, God, that shit's corny as fuck.
The first two records are, like, they're futuristic. I'm thinking he's doing, like, the, shit, Mandy Moore had a album out when she was hot. She did, like, cover records.
Right.
She was, like, kind of chill, you know. I thought he was gonna be more like, I don't know, like doing some guitar stuff, or maybe it was going to be acoustic or unplugged.
Yeah, yeah, that was kind of what I was thinking the way it was going to be. You know, I thought it was going to be like this, you know, more of an acoustic kind of, you know, just one of those kind of things. But I mean, you know, man, like, yeah, the first song, the Filthy Joint, I actually wasn't mad at that one. I wasn't mad at you. I'm like, okay, all right. And then I never heard the second one. All I heard the Supplies jam, and I was just like, "You got to be shitting me!" That, but
the video was weird because it's like he's in the club, and it's like he's going to a club, then he's like doing a stakeout, and it's like a Shia LaBeouf protest thing, and then it's kind of like a fake little Billie Jean moment. And then, like, at the end, like, everything goes to, like, Mad Max, sepia tone type shit. And he's got these kids around him, and he's with a white woman, but the kids look like Benetton biracial
right.
kids.
Right, the colors of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, there's so many. I saw the video, and it's just so many themes going on. I'm like, right. Bro, this shit is, what the fuck? So, nah, man, I will check the album when it comes out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, you know, I mean, you know, he good for maybe one or two, maybe. But
yeah,
at this point, I'm kind of just looking to see what kind of train wreck it's going to be. Because once I heard the Supplies jam, I was just like, nigga, you got to be shitting me. Like that, this nigga that made a jam called Supplies. So now I'm dying to hear Flannel. Like, I've got to hear Flannel now. Like, I want to know what that's about.
I
got to
hear it all, too. I'm disappointed in him. Like you said, I don't have anything really invested in him, but I remember when he, because really, I mean, he's kind of low key, not low key, but kind of tried to steal Usher's swag a little bit.
Yeah. But nah, he like, oh, fuck this. Like, you, like I said, man, you always know when they're about to make that shift.
Mm-hmm.
When like black people, when white people start picking up acoustic guitars, like that's kind of when you see, like when Justin Bieber was on the Grammys, I guess a couple years back,
mm-hmm.
and he like was doing something, and he just came out and he started off playing an acoustic guitar. I said, "Yep, that's it." Like Bieber is tired of being a nigga. Like it's over. Nigga Bieber has left the building.
I didn't know much about Bieber. I knew like a little bit of his stuff, and I hated on him because he was dating Selena Gomez, even though Selena Gomez is like a little too young for me.
12, yeah.
Yeah, she's 20. She's like 23 or 24. Oh, anyway. Okay. Let's get off of that. But like that Chance the Rapper record, Juke Jam, whatever.
Yeah, the Juke Jam joint. Yeah, yeah.
Like, that motherfucker, he laced the shit out of that hook. And yeah. I was like, he can come to the hook cookout off the strength of that hook. Like, that's, to me, that was one of the best, like, guest appearances on a...
Yeah, that was a cool record.
Yeah,
I
dug that. And I was not expecting that. Made me think about, like, a girl from junior high. I was like, God damn.
But see, I think my white boy that I cut for that is underrated and all this shit is Nick Jonas. Like Nick Jonas be coming with some shit, man. I don't know what it is about his solo career that just never quite turned the corner or what, I don't know, but mm-hmm. he had a record a couple years back, like a year or two back, called Levels, man. That shit was a motherfucker. I love it.
I'm gonna check for that. Did he do a record with Ariana Grande like a couple years ago?
I want to say he did. And I want to
like,
say
it was like for some soundtrack because it made me buy her album because I was, yeah. I think I was in San Francisco and I was like, gee, I think I saw it on YouTube or something. I was like, God, there. Of course, Ariana Grande is a Mariah Carey like reasonable facsimile, low key.
Right.
I think she's talented. And I was like, shit, okay, yeah. I guess what I want to ask you as a supreme black Twitter delegate. Do you think we'll ever forgive him for Tittygate?
Man, I think it's gonna determine. I think what he does on this this upcoming Super Bowl may depend on that. I just don't know if he's had that ubiquitous black jam. I mean, mm-hmm. the short answer to that is yes. Black people will forgive anything if you come with a jam. Okay. You know what I mean? I mean, R. Kelly pissed on a teenager, like, you know, and,
yeah.
you know, it, you black people will forgive anything, you know, if you coming with some heat.
Yeah.
So I just don't think he's come with that ubiquitous black heat yet. Like, he kind of came with it on the 2020 Experience Volume 1. Like,
yeah.
Volume 1
yeah.
had some joints on it. Volume 1 was good. But then Volume 2 was just, it was like, nigga, you could have kept all this shit.
Yeah.
And then, like, he came with it. I like the Take Back the Night joint.
Right, that's a nice take jam.
But then it was, like, the same slogan as, like, the college rape slogan or something. Like, wasn't it, like, a women's
group? True. Yes, yeah, they, like, dragging around their mattresses.
Yeah, it was like the Take Back the Night. So it was just an awkward thing. You know what I mean?
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, and that
was the first thing I thought of when I saw the title. I was like, I mean, the groove is jam. I mean, the shit is dope, but like, I don't want to be dancing to a damn rape carol, dog. Like, this shit is kind of...
rape carol.
Yeah, it's a little... It's a conflict of interest here. I don't know.
Like, that's new. Oh, Jesus. Oh, I don't want, I really don't want to know what's in that cannon, but I think maybe Baby It's Cold Outside is one of them, because every Christmas is always one of those. I don't even think of the music, even if the music was hot. I think he would just have to, did he really give her an apology?
I don't think he did. Yeah. I don't think he ever did. Because, I mean, that really fucked Janet up. I mean, let me be clear. I mean, Janet divorced the billionaire and parted with a lot of his bread. So, I mean, Janet's doing all right. Janet is fucking killing it. You know what I mean? But what it did to her career, I mean, that was fucked up.
Right, right. Yeah, it was just, I don't know, man. I don't know if it was planned or not, but I feel like, yeah, he just didn't come clean with that. And I feel what's disappointing to me is it's not on the level of me just being disappointed with Jason Weaver's music career, but it's,
oh wow,
no, just because like I feel like, I don't know, shit. I mean, sidebar, I thought that guy had the potential to be like really great, and I feel like maybe you would have some kind of insight on it, you being in the music industry, but it just seemed like he had the Lion King, he was a young Simba singing voice, which he couldn't, yeah, why he couldn't have been the whole fucking thing. Then he had the Jacksons movie, and he was on Thea. He came out with the Love Ambition joint that was
smooth. Which was a dope record.
It was dope as fuck. And he had the cats from that used to be in The Boys. Kyrie and Hakeem and them.
They were producing.
Yeah, and it's like Steve McKeever and all these people. Like, I don't know a lot about that production shit, but I knew who was on that fucking album. And Rahsaan Patterson singing background.
Yeah. No, he had all the right people. He had all the right people. Like, and, you know, working.
Yeah, and that was like, that was a smooth album. And then the Stay With Me record came out. I guess he's working with Horace Brown, whoever was in the Motown camp back then. And then he just kind of, I was like, okay, now he's going to hit hard. Now he's going to be up there with, maybe he can compete with Usher. I don't know. But we never got to know. What do you think happened?
You know what, man? I think the thing with him, I just think it's just a stigma on artists that start off in TV and go to music.
Even though Drake's doing it?
Well, yeah, Drake did it, but Drake, there's a couple factors there. I mean, A, he's Canadian.
Okay.
And B, he was on Degrassi. Like,
yeah.
I mean, who really watched Degrassi? I mean, he had a big viewership, you know what I'm saying? But, yeah. Like, you know, but, you know, it's a different, it's a little, just a horse of a different shade, you know what I mean?
So would the American version be like A.C. Slater, like Mario Lopez becoming a R&B singer, rapper guy?
Yeah. Like, yeah. So I guess the equivalent would be like if, you know, like shit. I mean, what's like that? A hot show or
Blackish.
Yeah. Like if the kid Junior. From Blackish, yeah, if Junior from Blackish decided to like, yo, I'm going for it. Like, I'm going to go for it and I'm going to like really go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, nah, kid, motherfuckers ain't buying that because so much of MCing is posturing, and you can't really posture when you was on a sitcom, you know what I mean? Like, right. It ain't really so much, ain't too much tough guy shit you can talk. So I think in the case of Drake, it worked because he's Canadian and he was on Degrassi, and the vast majority of his audience, of the American audience he was trying to get, had no clue about that shit. I mean, we weren't fucking watching Degrassi, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah, no, I wasn't. No.
Yeah, I mean, so with Jason Weaver, man, I just think it was just a thing where, you know, it's just hard for TV artists, though, for actors, like, to go into music. Now, they can go the other way around. Mm-hmm. That transition is seamless. The transition from musician to actor, I mean, that's, you know, that's seamless, you know what I mean? Or going from rapper to actor. That's seamless, and I think that's because, you know, I tell people all the time, I mean, rapping is acting. Every time you spit a verse, you're essentially giving a performance. You know, every verse you hear is a performance of some sign. It is truly an act in some way.
Sure.
So I think, you know, rappers are easy to make that transition, but yeah, it's just hard, man. It's tough. Like, cause once you've seen someone as a character, you know what I mean? It's hard to let their music into your life in that way, I think.
Yeah. Cause he used to do it. He used to do it on Smart Guy. And I was like, damn, they should, you know, he had a song. I still remember that shit too. He had a song called, he's like, girl, you know I'm dogging you. Girl, you know I'm playing you. And he had, like, they used to, like, jam out. I was like, God damn it. Why aren't, I don't know, man. That's my white whale. I got to get him. I want to get him on the show. I want to talk to him. I want to do a retrospective.
Yeah, I'm sure he would be happy to do it. I mean, I thought he was back.
Mm-hmm. With Chingy? When he,
yeah, when he did the One Call Away joint. Yeah. I was like, yo.
Yeah.
Like, yo, dude, this shit is, he back. But, you know, it never, I don't think it went too far after that.
Yeah, because I was looking at him like, because I think he's like, I think he's our age. He's pretty much our age. And now, yeah. And, you know, growing up, I was looking at that dude like, he's the guy. Like, if I could have a career, it would be him. Like, that he was killing it. And it's just frustrating. But not to his level, though. But Justin Timberlake, it was disappointing because I felt like he had the potential to be, like, black people's... Maybe this is I think to you, this would be speaking in hyperbole, but somewhere along the lines of Michael McDonald, our Michael McDonald, as far as, like, being loved. If Nipplegate didn't happen, what do you think?
I don't know. He didn't. Yeah, no. I don't know. I see the correlation, but he was never gonna be. He's never gonna be Tina Marie.
Okay.
Like, he's never gonna be as beloved amongst black people as Tina Marie.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or, yeah, you know, I think in terms of loving the love of white celebrity or white musicians, I think Tina Marie is kind of at the top of that food chain. Like, she was just beloved. Like, everybody, all your aunties love Tina Marie. You know what I mean? Okay. So I don't think Justin had that. He didn't have that story that anchored him to the community.
Okay.
Like, you know, like, Tina Marie had a story. You know what I'm saying? Like, Tina Marie had a story. Tina Marie had a story, and she was with Rick James for years. They was doing coke together, abusing each other and shit.
Yeah.
Like, she earned her stripes.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
She earned
that.
You know what I mean? And even Michael McDonald, he earned his stripes. He was on the What's Happening episode with the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah. You guys talked about that on Questlove Supreme.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Like, that shit, you know, that earns you some stripes in the community.
Gotcha.
Yeah, Justin never had that moment other than working with niggas. He never had that moment that really bonded him with niggas.
Got you. Yeah. Somebody got mad at me. I think I put up a tweet or something about his restaurant that he has investment in, and it was like overpriced, and it's mediocre. And somebody got mad at me, and every time I like have a tweet or something about Justin Timberlake, they're like, what did he do? Because it's almost like, what can he do to get back in our good graces? And from what I'm gathering from you, it's just, he's got to have a hot song.
Yeah, I mean, I think he got to have a hot song.
Okay.
You know what I mean? He definitely has to have a hot song. But again, at this point, you know, and I've thought about this on Twitter before as well. Like, it's just a different time now because there's no longer this, We no longer kind of live in a vacuum, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's no longer, like, those big songs. You know, we was coming up, Pop Thriller was just a juggernaut. Purple Rain was just a fucking juggernaut, you know what I'm saying? There are no more juggernauts anymore. There are no more monster hits because everyone's attention is in 100 different places. So, you know, I mean, even the songs that are quote-unquote number one hits, I mean, you know, I remember, like, the Despacito song. I still hadn't heard that fucking song.
I don't think.
You know what I'm saying? I think I just heard that song maybe like a week ago, in a restaurant or some shit. I can't remember. But yeah, but you know, people's attention is so divided and so split up into, you know, I mean, dude, it's what, like 800 cable channels and yeah. Netflix and Hulu and Twitter and IG. I mean, it's just so many diversions. So at this point, I say that to say, at this point, I don't even know if it's possible for Timberlake to gain just the cultural, just the mass acceptance of niggas, even if he did drop a jam.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Because it's just, I mean, it's the listening, the audience is just so fragmented now. So I don't even know if that's even possible.
I think that's a good assessment of it. Like, because I always wanted to get a really good take on that. Because I just wonder, like, huh? Because I had Justified. I didn't have any NSYNC albums. Some of the hits, I was like, oh, okay, those are pretty good. But then my interest was piqued because of Pharrell and because of Timbaland. And I was like, that's pretty good. I liked it. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to see him live. But I'll go to my grave saying that he ain't Usher.
Right.
I've dedicated some segments to Usher because I think he was the guy that sort of was at least trying to carry the torch that, you know, maybe James Brown, Michael Jackson. Like, it was like, God, see, you can bring me back down to earth on this because you're the music expert here. But it's almost like he was a synthesis of like James Brown and Bobby and Michael.
You're saying who was this? Who was
Usher? Like the torch.
Usher was.
He was carrying on tradition of being that guy because I saw them both live. I saw Justin Timberlake and Christina Aguilera in the Justified tour, like I think in 2003. And 2002, I saw Usher, Nas, and Faith at what was back then called the Nissan Pavilion at Stone Ridge in Virginia. I don't know what it is now, but and he was like an athlete because there was no backing track. I don't know. He was singing and dancing at the same time, and it was live, and it was complicated moves. And he did it for, I guess, close to 2 hours.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was just like, I was in awe. I was like, this guy is really amazing. And then he always had at least the first three or four records were just a few songs on there that just like, that just really tug the heartstrings or hit me at a place that I could connect to, you know, about a girl.
I got you.
Yeah. He's great, you know?
No. Usher was definitely, I mean, in terms of what he's doing, I mean, in terms of, like, the trajectory and everything, yeah. I think Usher is definitely of that ilk of just the, you know, the next progression of, like, the James, Michael, you know, not saying he's them at all, but
right.
you feel what I'm coming from.
Sure.
But, yeah, man, I just think with Usher... Yeah, dude, like, Usher was the total package. I mean, I shouldn't say was. I mean, he is.
Like, well, you know, granted, he's at another stage of his career where he's doing, like, just listening to him talk on Questlove Supreme, he's, you know, it sounds like he's reconfiguring some things and taking another, you know, another, I'm not saying he's like a cruise ship act, but I'm just appreciating prime Usher. Where,
yeah, man.
You know,
yeah, like, he's done with the dancer and then the pyrotechnics and the handstands and flips and shit. It's like a nigga about to be 40. He's like, as he should be.
Because I got really angry whenever I don't remember what award show it was, but they were doing an Usher tribute and he did like maybe a 15-20 minute medley of his songs and he danced and people were trying to talk shit about him. And I was like, what the fuck are you guys? Do you know who that is?
Right.
That made me angry. I just think I don't know that he gets enough credit, you know? No. Maybe that's just.
Yeah, man. He's definitely someone that's, you know, he, you just forget just how many hits he had. And I think he's, I mean, even when we talk about just, you know, we talk about just those, I mean, just monster joints, you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Right.
Was like kind of the last of the juggernauts. I mean, that record was every fucking way, and I wasn't a fan of it, but it was a hit. It was undeniable. You can throw that, you can drop that shit in a room full of 50-year-old white people in today, and it shit will go off. It will always go off.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, I just think he's great. I wanted to shift gears a little bit until we get into the real proceedings. Do you know what you're wearing to the Black Panther premiere?
And man,
and are you, second question, are you keeping your sons out of school?
I don't think I'll keep them out of school. You know what I'm saying? Because niggas need school. What I may do, what I definitely will be doing, I already have my tickets. My tickets are purchased. Mm-hmm. I already have my tickets purchased. And
Black Theater or Galleria Theater?
Oh, come on now. Come on now. We are going to here's the thing. I'm going to see it twice, I know, right? Yeah. And I'm going to see it, you know, because, you know, I'm going to see it the first time with mostly white people.
Yeah.
Because I actually need to listen to dialogue. Mm-hmm. And you know what I mean? Now, when you go see a movie with a theater full of black people, it doesn't matter if that movie is about, you know, if it's a comedy or if it's a drama, if it's a thriller, if it's any movie you watch in a room full of black people is a comedy. Like, automatically, that's what it becomes. Niggas is talking, niggas is responding back to the screen, niggas is on their phone. Like, it's just, I love us, but I know us.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so, yeah. The last place I want to be my first time seeing Black Panther is in a room full of black people. I know the irony is a little lot to take.
I understand.
It's the fucking truth. I do not want to be in a room full of black people my first time watching Black Panther. So my first time, I think I may just go see it. You know, we definitely going to the white theater. I may go and, I don't know, man. Like, I'm thinking if I can rock a dashiki. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I may rock my dashiki. I got left over from the breaks or something when I stole.
Yeah.
I may do that. But that's about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to do any. I'm just going to wear regular clothes. But I think I kind of. Well, they opened up a new AMC dine-in theater. And it's pretty nice. And it's at the, I guess, like the rich people mall where they have like a Bloomingdale's and they have like the nice restaurant park with the P.F. Chang's. And, you know, like, so I think that's going to be good. But I think they did open up this new luxury theater maybe 20 minutes away from me where they have the reclining seats and the seats are like $20.
Right.
So I don't know. I think. But see, the thing about that AMC is it's near a college. I don't think it'll be too crazy, though. I think it'll be okay.
Yeah, man. And to me, too, that's another thing, too, dude. Like, I hate those fucking the new theaters, like the new like theaters where you can order food and all this dumb shit.
Why?
Like,
'cause you fall asleep after you eat? Or?
Well, it's not even that. It don't quite get that black, but... But it's just fucking whack, dude. Like, I'm trying to watch a movie. I don't want, like, people walking around taking orders and bringing drinks and shit. Like, I ain't come for all that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get the, you know, I get it. But, so they have this new one. They have this theater, like, around my way. That's like one of the luxury theaters with the reclining seats and the assigned seats and shit.
Yeah.
And they have the thing where you just get your buzzer and... You walk out to like the aisle, or you walk, you know, out to the door, and you just get your food when your buzzer goes off. So it's not like waiters are walking around in the theater. You know what I'm saying? Okay. I had that experience. I was in New York. I went to see the I Am Not Your Negro, the James Baldwin joint, and that shit was just it felt like dinner theater, dude. Like it was motherfuckers walking around.
You were eating chicken wings, listening to
yeah, like niggas bringing nachos and shit. I'm trying. This is why James Baldwin is talking shit about white people. It just felt totally out of place. It didn't feel par for the course. I'm like, I should not be drinking ginger ale and busting down a chicken quesadilla. while watching James Baldwin.
Where was this at? Which theater was this at in New York?
It was one of them goddamn things. I can't remember. It was in Brooklyn, I want to say. Oh,
probably the Alamo Draft House, the new one?
That sounds about right. Okay. I think that was it.
I've never been to that one. I've been to the one in Yonkers. But, yeah, it's something about, like, that one. Like, the AMC, you order your food, so you get your ticket, and then your seats are assigned. So if you're in seat H5, you say, oh, I want the chicken wings and the nachos. And you place your order, and then they come to you during the trailers and drop your food. Depending on what time you get there and what time you place your order, they just do the drop like then and there. And so it's really not that much foot traffic, but somewhere like Alamo Draft House, they're like kind of constantly there if you, you know, hit your buzzer.
Yeah,
man, it is. I guess they're just trying to enhance the experience because a lot of people aren't buying tickets.
Man, listen, dude, if they really started dropping movies, like started doing day and date with movies, man, wouldn't nobody leave their fucking house. I think maybe the only movies I would actually go to see on the big screen would be like superhero movies and shit. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the thing I'll say, like, about, like, you know, we talk about Black Panther and, like, you know, the superhero Marvel shit. I mean, I enjoy them, but there's no replay value for them for me. Like, I've only watched one, like Avengers, Captain America, like all them shits only watched once. You know what I'm saying? But like The Dark Knight, I've watched, I mean, God, who knows how many times.
It's The Dark Knight, yeah.
Yeah, it's the fucking Dark Knight. So, you know what I mean? But yeah, I don't know. It's something about the Marvel movies that if I found out that, you know, Black Panther was dropping day and date, if it was like, yo, this shit is available now on fucking Hulu or whatever.
How much would you pay for it?
Ah, man, now you bring up a good question, because then it becomes of what are you paying for? Are you going to pay for luxury or are you going to pay for comfort? So are you paying for the luxury of watching it on like a huge screen, or would you rather pay for the comfort of being able to watch that shit at your crib?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think I may go for the comfort, bro. I don't know. That might be it. Yeah. I don't know.
There's something that I mean, I just got the movie pass. I haven't used it yet, but do you know about that? The movie pass?
Yeah, that's like the $10, $10 a month bang out. You can just go see whatever the fuck you want, right?
Right. It's like a cult. Cause like so many of my friends have been like, Chris, you have to get it. Like, there's like someone, some Heaven's Gate shit.
It sounds like the new prepaid legal and shit.
Yeah, so I was just like, so I did it. So I haven't, because I love going to the theater. I love like physically going.
I do too. And I really do.
It's like, especially like since like for the last few years, just like doing stand up where you're in a city, different city, different town, or even like when I'm just I get off of work and just go watch a movie before I go do sets. It just relaxes me. And then it just like, then I can just get on with my day. And like, I watched, cause I think it sparks my creativity too, because I had a show. I was doing a weekend of shows opening for, someone at my home club, and I went to see Coco this was on a Thursday. Have you seen Coco?
I have not seen Coco yet. I have not seen
it. Man, I think that's the best movie of 2017. Like, other than like Get Out, everybody's gonna say Get Out. It's Get Out is great, but just like from an emotional standpoint, like that shit. The last 15 minutes, the room was dusty, man.
Oh shit!
Yeah,
okay.
I was like, you know, if you've ever had a dream, Fonte.
I've had several die, so
yeah,
you know.
So yeah, so it's like it's real, and then I was,
yeah, but I was skeptical on it. I mean, I'll see it eventually, but I like Pixar, man. They had fell the fuck off of me for a while. Like, they Pixar was kind of on some other shit for a minute. Like, I used to be a Pixar like head, like I rolled for them, but somewhere along the lines of like Cars 2. And then, like, the Brave joint, that shit was huff. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, they started, I was like, like, they used to have, like, must-see movies for me. If I saw Pixar was dropping some shit, I was there. But as of lately, last couple of years, I was kind of like, So I don't know.
Yeah, one of my boys was telling my good buddy J.O. Covan, New York comic. He was saying like, "Yo, you Chris, man," and I was like, "All right." Then one of my coworkers who happens to be Mexican was like, "Yo, man, you got to see it." I was like, "It's legit." Like I said, as a Mexican, like, did it? You know, is it on par? Is it like, do you approve? And he was like, "Yeah, man." He's like, "You're probably gonna cry." I was like,
"Oh shit!"
I was like, "That next shit got me, man." And I went on stage that night. And I said, you know, I was like, "Man, if you didn't see Coco, you're fucking racist. Like, you see all the movies, you see all the Pixar movies, but the ones with the brown one, you don't go see it." I was like, "Okay." And then I just, like, it sparked my creativity, and I riffed with the crowd, and I maybe have a bit out of it. But I would say that's probably the best thing that I've seen. Where the hell was I
going? Well, I'm going to check it. I'm going to check Coco. I'll give that a run.
It's good. It's really good. It's almost like, God, the Mexican Footloose?
Oh, really? It's Mexican Footloose, dude?
In a way, except it's with music and not dance. It's with like literally like being a musician. Like this kid's parents don't want him to be a musician because a musician in their family tore their life apart when he awesome Papa was a Rolling Stone shit to a certain degree. But yeah, it's really fantastic. And then I guess what are you watching right now? What are some of the things that you liked last year or that you're currently into that you could share with the listeners? Like,
oh man, what did I watch? I mean, it's so much shit. Like, it's like a million fucking shows now.
Sure.
What did I watch that I like? I'm trying to think. Oh my God. I mean, of course, Black Mirror.
Right.
Oh, I mean, which we'll discuss at some point, whatever you want.
Yeah, we will. We'll get into
it. Black Mirror. Damn, man, I'm trying to think. What did I see? I enjoyed, like, all my years of Run Together. So, Better Call Saul. Well, that shit, that was last year. That was 2017.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's fine. Yeah, Better Call Saul, I thought, was great.
Better Call Saul was dope. It's not for, if you're looking for just the, you know, the running gun pacing of Breaking Bad is not that, but just in terms of a character and just showing you how this character just became who he became, and oh man, like that shit is crazy. So I really enjoyed Better Call Saul. What else? I mean Atlanta. I mean shit. What?
Oh yeah,
I mean,
that was great.
You
yeah.
say Atlanta. Damn, I'm trying to blank. It's so many fucking shows, dude.
Yeah, I didn't want to mean to put you under the gun, but
no, it's yeah. cool. I'm just literally trying to think of all the shit that you know I watch.
I just got done watching Broadchurch, which is a BBC series about this murder that takes place in this coastal town, somewhere like in London, somewhere like a coastal town. And then these detectives have to figure out what's going on, and you get it. It takes a whole season to find out who did it. 8 episodes, and then there's season 2. The person that did it's on trial, and then season 3. There's another case, but you still have the characters from the original season involved, and it's just how one murder changes the life of everybody in this small coastal town.
And this is on Netflix?
This is on Netflix, and it's 8 times, what's 8 times 3?
24.
24 episodes. There you go.
Okay.
And it's good.
Quick bounce.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good. Like, that's, I think one of my dreams has always been to play a detective on a procedural. Like, now that dream, because I love New York Undercover coming up, and because that was dope because they would solve a crime, and then they go listen to an art.
They go to Natalie's. There's nothing like solving a crime and then kicking back to some smooth jazz.
Yeah, like Tevin Campbell and Brandy doing a cover of a 70s song or something. But like, yeah, like doing something like that. Or now, like or being like a troubled cop in a BBC series, because I could do the accent if I just got like to the level of like being somebody that's like, oh, we could let Chris do this BBC series, and I could do the accent because what's her name? What's my girl? Elizabeth Moss did it.
It's like Handmaid's Tale, right?
She's on Handmaid's Tale now, but she did this series called Top of the Lake, which is like Sundance. A Sundance BBC collab where she played a New Zealander, and she rocked the accent. And you could just have like you're just like because the bad guys, the villains are so much more they're more formidable, and you kind of get into their psyche a little bit more, where they're just not this like two dimensional character. Where at sometimes you could have empathy for them, and so it makes that cat and mouse thing more intense, so it's a little grittier. So I think that's one of the goals for me.
I think you should go. I mean, you already played a New York City garbage man, so I think that's that's totally the next in line in the trajectory of black acting. Just you know,
yeah, man. I'm working on it. It's slowly a slow build to get to that. I'm playing like laborers. Like I played a maintenance man in High Maintenance. I play a Lyft driver in Tracy Morgan's show.
Oh, okay.
A male nurse in Jessica Jones, and an exterminator in this Melissa McCarthy movie that's coming.
Well, out. I think that's what it is. I mean, I think you are. I think that's your build, in Insecure. How Lil Rel said, you know, I got the pastor's body.
Yes, that's why I related to him so much.
Yeah, I think you have like the bookman body.
Yeah, and I gotta work it down to something else where I could play the lead guy's friend that says, hey man, you gotta go get her, bro.
Yeah, you put like the fat funny sidekick nigga. Like,
but
that.
I gotta get into like, I don't know. Like, this is like my body now is like out of work. Like, I just got cut from the Jets and I'm like sad.
Right.
Like, I couldn't even make the Jets team and I'm just like, fuck.
Yeah. So yeah. Now, you gotta work on your pass blocking.
Yeah. So I gotta do that, get the weight down, and then I can just be more competitive to other. But then, like, you know, I could just be that flawed cop that's sad and something happened. So I'm on this shitty case. And I still have the talent, but I just like Reese's peanut butter cups.
You very much could be that, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you have like that. You definitely have like, you're almost like a taller Bunk.
Yeah, I could rock with that. I mean, I could do that.
Yeah, you could be like the taller Bunk. Yeah. Like you're like this, like your Bunk meets maintenance man meets comforting custodian.
Like. Yeah, they cut out a scene in High Maintenance where like there was this old black lady that was going to the ATM machine and her money like flies out and the whole community like helps her, and I had like a couple more lines, but they wedged me right in between a threesome. And
oh yeah when I saw that part,
yeah,
when,
my parents resubscribed to HBO to see me on there, and they were like, we saw you.
I said, that ain't all we saw.
I was like, yeah, but enough about my fledgling.
But nah, brother, career. I'm proud of you, man. I'm proud of you. You booking, man. That's fucking dope.
Thanks.
That's dope.
Yeah, man. I come a long way from being cut out of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. That would have been the first one. But I think you can see my forehead still in that. I'll go with you can still see my forehead in that. But it's great, man. It's validation. I'm sure you know what that's like when you get to work, do cool shit. You've been doing it for a while, and so it's good to be like, you know, kind of like toiling away, and then you finally get a little bit of something.
Yeah, you get like one fucking glimmer of hope.
That's yeah.
Like, okay, maybe I want. Maybe I won't say fuck it today.
Yeah, because it was one of those things where it's like, I remember something went wrong at work, but it wasn't major, but it was just some, you know, some bullshit goes down at work. And then I knew the next day I was going to be on set for a Melissa McCarthy movie. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking to myself, do you know where the fuck I'm going to be tomorrow?
Right.
Do you fucking know? You don't. But, you know, I don't, you know, whatever. But so in the words of, the great Kurt Vonnegut, so it goes. But I do recommend Broadchurch. I think you would dig it.
Yeah, I get it. I was on, did you ever fuck with Gamora?
No, what is that?
Nigga. Man, look.
Is that a Netflix show?
Yes. Well, it's a Sundance show.
Uh-huh.
But I want to say the first two seasons are on Netflix.
Okay.
It is, it takes place in Italy. And so it is basically The Wire, if The Wire focused just on the streets,
mm-hmm.
and if The Wire wasn't trying to make some grand point about the American society and all that shit. It's okay. Just, we not commenting on, you know, we not talking about the cops and looking at, you know, the educational system and all that. We just dealing with the streets, and it's just goddamn run and gun. Nigga, that shit is fire.
Okay.
It's based on a true story about the Gamora crime family, and it's based on this book that this cat wrote. And like, supposedly the dude that wrote the book is like still in hiding now. Like, wow. He's still in hiding, but it's based on, like, you know, on true shit. And so it just basically deals with this crime family and, you know, their fall or their rise and fall and the different players that come into play and how they get fucked up. Like, it is a show that there are no wasted beats in the show.
Okay.
Like, none whatsoever. Like, you know how you watch The Wire and you would see somebody do something and it's just like, you know, like we all knew, or even if we didn't know, but you know what I'm saying? But we had an idea that, like, Stringer Bell, you know, doing that deal with Prop Joe, like, we knew that was the end of him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, we didn't know how it was gonna come, but it's just like, man, that ain't gonna go good, String. But it wasn't until like the end of the season, like 6, 7, 8 episodes later, that he finally was killed.
Right.
In Gamora, if somebody does something that merits death, that shit happens in like the next 10 minutes, nigga. Like, that shit, bruh, it is no fucking around. Oh my God. It's dope. It's fucking dope. It's really violent, but the violence is like, the way they shoot it, the violence is like really tactical and like really like methodic violence, if that makes any sense.
I just added it. I added it to my queue. Are there subtitles or is it just?
It's subtitles. It's subtitles. And how, like, my man put me on it.
Okay.
My man put me on it, and I was just like, all right, whatever. I'll watch it. And so I got on it, and I was just letting them shits go. I was like, what? So then, like, season 2 came out, and I was getting some work done in my house. I was getting some guys doing some. I was doing some kitchen remodeling. And so, you know, they had, you know, all the shit, all the equipment going in there or whatever. So I couldn't watch nothing that, right. You know, I had to listen to. So I was like, all right, shit, Gamora's out. I can read it. Run this shit. Man, that shit is fucking fire.
I added it to the queue. I think I added Peaky Blinders. Because people have been telling me to watch that, and I haven't watched that one.
Why watch Gamora before you watch that other shit? Like, watch that. Because that could be a whole nother conversation. Like, once you finish that, I can come back on the show, and we can chop it up about that. Because okay. That's kind of, like, I talked about Gamora at the end, you know, when we did our QLS, like, year-end wrap-up.
Okay.
And I've been getting so many tweets like, yo, man, this shit is fire. Like, you was right about this. Like,
oh, good shit. Right.
So the word is spreading. So I need other cats. It ain't probably like, it's like two other my homies that I can talk Gamora. But so
all right.
I need you to get in on it. I need you to get in on the group chat.
I will get in on it, man. Hey, folks. So that was the end of that portion of my conversation with Fonte. If you like that, there's more stuff over on the Patreon page. But until then, hope everybody has a great week, and I'll talk to you next time. Peace.